Hello and welcome to the South Carolina Lead. You trust the lead to keep you up to date on important state news, and we've been doing that more often as our state faces the COVID-19 virus. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on November 13th, 2020, down on James Island. Yep, back in my sound closet with my pillows. Just so you know, some of the information in this podcast may have changed by the time you've heard it. This podcast cuts through the noise and gives you South Carolina-specific COVID-19 news and stories. This episode features a look at the exponential growth of COVID-19 cases in the country, an update on the most secure election in our history, also what's going on with the Georgia recount by hand. We hear about what Fed Chair Jerome Powell's outlook is and learn about how the likelihood of mental illness increases with a COVID-19 diagnosis and more. Additionally, we want to hear your stories, so we set up a voicemail box to hear from you all about your daily life in these uncertain times. Also, we want to hear about your Thanksgiving Day plans and anything around the holidays. Let us know. We're compiling a bunch of voicemails about how people are going to be celebrating Thanksgiving this year, if you are at all. You can leave us a message at 803-563-7169. You don't have to leave us your name if you're going to be traveling somewhere. You don't want people to give you a hard time. We just want to know your plans. 803-563-7169. Now for the latest in South Carolina. Currently, the spread of COVID-19 is ongoing, widespread, and not contained, according to Department of Health and Environmental Control data. There have been 3,835 confirmed deaths, and currently there are 181,243 confirmed cases being reported in all 46 counties as of November 13th at 4 p.m. Speaking of November 13th, Friday the 13th, there were 1,348 cases reported in the state that day alone. And Friday was the fifth day in the past week that we have seen more than 1,000 cases reported in a day. So yeah, here comes that surge that we've been talking about that is happening. Our percent positive is 14.7%. The number of patients hospitalized with COVID-19 is 775. There are 188 patients in intensive care and 89 are on ventilators. Now for comparison, there are currently 70,000 Americans in hospitals nationwide with COVID-19. And for some more grim data, 40,000 Americans are projected to die in the next 3 weeks, according to the CDC. Already, more than 242,500 Americans have died from COVID-19. And here's some eye-opening data from Johns Hopkins. From the first case reported in the U.S. on January 22nd, it took 96 days to reach 1 million cases. From there, it took us 44 days to reach 2 million cases. We've now surpassed 10 million. So, quick quiz here. How long do you think it took us to go from 9 million to 10 million cases? Hey, whoa, calm down. This is not The Price is Right. These are people. This is not good news. But it took us 10 days to go from 9 million cases to 10 million cases. Completely worrying there. That's because our daily incidence rate in the U.S. is around 110,000 new cases per day, and it's still increasing. The U.S. is also reporting 976 deaths per day, an increase of nearly 40% since October 18th. Now, Johns Hopkins expects that the average daily mortality will once again exceed 1,000 deaths per day in the coming days. If the U.S. continues on this trajectory, it could surpass 250,000 cumulative deaths in the next 2 weeks. The pandemic also continues to accelerate globally, now increasing by 10 million cases every 3 weeks. Again, that was a lot of numbers I threw at you, but they are not just numbers. Like we always say, they are people, people that you know, people that we all know, being affected by this every day. So be safe. All right, let's lead off politics with the latest about the election that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris were declared the winners of last Saturday. The U.S. Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency, I didn't even know this existed, under the Department of Homeland Security, released the following statement on the election Thursday, saying, quote, "The November 3rd election was the most secure in American history. Right now, across the country, election officials are reviewing and double-checking the entire election process prior to finalizing the result. When states have close elections, many will recount ballots. All of the states with close results in the 2020 presidential race have paper records of each vote, allowing the ability to go back and count each ballot if necessary. This is an added benefit for security and resilience. This process allows for the identification and correction of any mistakes or errors. There is no evidence that any voting system deleted or lost votes, changed votes, or was in any way compromised. Quote, again, that's from the U.S. Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency at DHS. So a pretty hefty comment right there from our federal government about how nothing was compromised, no votes were changed or deleted, or anything bad happened during our election. Now, that being said, Republican members of South Carolina's congressional delegation appear to think otherwise and said so during a press conference at the Statehouse on Tuesday. Here is 3rd Congressional District Representative Jeff Duncan.
America needs to get it right because it is the integrity of our election system that's at stake. Regardless who is president, whether it's Donald Trump or Joe Biden, the integrity of our election system from this day forward is the most important thing we can focus on. Because Americans have to have confidence, and people around the world have to have confidence in the American electoral system when we're electing the President of the United States, members of Congress, United States senators, and all the way down to city councils and school boards.
2nd Congressional District Representative Joe Wilson offered some legislative solutions to further strengthen already safe elections. Measures such as the witness signature on absentee ballots, which election officials say serves no anti-fraud purpose and instead results in more disenfranchisement.
Efforts should be made to require for mail-in absentee ballots to have their exterior envelopes reviewed and removed for counting on election day. And again, South Carolina did right. But can you believe that the absentee ballots in New York are going to be counted on November the 16th? That's wrong. It should be election day. And hey, it can be election day. Even states like Texas and California and also Florida, much larger states, and they were able to count the ballots.
Now, New York counts ballots that way because state law allows voters to change their minds and cast a ballot in person even after mailing in an absentee ballot. Pretty crazy, but that's what they do. Now, New York requires mail-in ballots to be postmarked by Election Day and has a grace period of 7 days for domestic ballots and 14 days for international and military ballots to reach county election boards. Again, only those ballots postmarked by Election Day are counted, and the state has received 1.6 million ballots by mail, which seems kind of low since they have about 10 million more registered voters in South Carolina, where we returned 1.3 million ballots. I guess a lot more people voted in person up there. Now, earlier in the week, 6th Congressional District Congressman and Majority Whip Jim Clyburn said if there was such rampant fraud as has been alleged with no evidence, then why isn't the validity of already called congressional races that were on the same ballot not being questioned?
I don't know why people seem to be hell-bent on destroying the fabric that's been holding this country together all these years.
Moving to our neighbor to the south, state law in Georgia requires that one race be audited by hand, and Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger chose the presidential race, in which Joe Biden leads Donald Trump by 14,000 votes. The recount of nearly 5 million ballots officially began Friday. Now, the outcome isn't expected to change, but the move will help placate politicians' unfounded fears over voter fraud claims in, again, an election that security experts called one of the most secure in our nation's history. You may have remembered from this week when Raffensperger, a Republican, was called upon by Republican Senators David Perdue and Kelly Loeffler to resign over his lack of transparency and that illegal votes may have been counted, again, citing no evidence. Raffensperger said, "Was there illegal voting? I'm sure of it. And my office is investigating all of it. Does it rise to the numbers or margin necessary to change the outcome to where President Trump is given Georgia's electoral votes? That is unlikely." Also in Georgia, the Trump campaign emailed the obituaries of 4 people they say voted from beyond the grave. CNN reports that elections officials said 2 of the deceased are no longer on the voter rolls and are looking into the other 2. So again, be sure to get accurate, real news from credible news outlets, especially when it comes to an institution at the backbone of our democracy. Again, Joe Biden is leading by 14,163 votes as of our taping, and the AP has not called Georgia yet. And in some non-voter fraud news, Governor Henry McMaster gave us some insight on several topics during a press avail on Wednesday. Now, he does stand by President Trump amid the challenges over the election results and looks forward to working with stronger Republican majorities in the Statehouse next year to advance his top priorities.
What has happened is that we have elected some conservative, sensible, determined people to come to Columbia, and that's good news. And that means that a lot of the things that we have been trying to do for some time will likely have a better chance of getting done. There are a lot of things we need to reform. There's some things we need to change. There's some steps we need to take. Law enforcement was one of our main goals last time, to have more funding, more money, more training for our law enforcement officers that I think are the finest in the country. But we can make them even better. And we want to raise that pay. But we want to also have a tax break on their retirement income full-time. That's military as well as first responders and law enforcement. We still have the Santee Cooper question on the table. And I think the changes in the Senate may help that. Early childhood, remember, I was promoting and asked the legislature for full 4K kindergarten statewide to cover about half the children now. We need to cover them all. And that was upended, of course, by the epidemic. But we need to get back. We need to do that. But we need to get the people. We need to get the people back to work. That's the main thing we have to do right now, is concentrate on keeping the people safe and getting everyone back to work, because South Carolina's business is business. And we understand that. And we know how important it is. And as you heard in the press conference earlier, that's our goal. And I'm confident that we're going to succeed.
Some of those bills he wants to see reach his desk are the fetal heartbeat bill, which would prohibit abortion as early as 6 weeks at a time when a heartbeat can be detected, and also when most women don't even know they're pregnant. McMaster also supports easing gun restrictions in the state. And you can also catch the rebroadcast of This Week in South Carolina on Sunday at 11:30 a.m. on SCE-TV. I had guests Scott Huffman of Winthrop University and Gibbs Knotts of the College of Charleston, again, recapping election 2020. We drill down in some more details, and we'll have a couple clips for you on Tuesday's episode. We're going to lead off our business section with some good news. State economists are predicting that when lawmakers return to Columbia in January to start crafting a new budget, they will have a roughly $1.2 billion extra to use in the fiscal year 2022 budget that begins next July. Now, the downside of this is that $1 billion of that is non-recurring, which means it's one-time dollars that lawmakers typically use for capital improvements to buildings and infrastructure, not for reoccurring operating expenses such as pay increases. Now you're thinking, extra money in the COVID era. What? How does that work? Well, that one-time money is thanks to surpluses from two previous budget cycles and a projected surplus for the current fiscal year. Speaking of the current fiscal year, however, the Board of Economic Advisors lowered revenue estimates by some $800 million. So that's your COVID effect right there. However, we're not going to see any budget cuts because we're operating under a continuing resolution, which kept everything at previous year's levels. Now, some bright spots so far as for revenue have been increases in lottery collections, which can only be used for certain education expenses, increased alcohol sales taxes, and deed stamp fees due to strong home sales. But so far, only 70% of jobs have returned, and Frank Rainwater, director of the State Revenue and Fiscal Affairs Office, says revenue collections will take some time to rebound as well.
As we discussed in our October forecast with the regional advisors, there was a lot of discussion about when do we think employment was going to return to the pre-pandemic levels. In this forecast, we decided upon a February 22, basically 15, 16 months out from now, will be the time in which we recover to that pre-pandemic employment level. And then we're just going to assume slower growth through the remainder of fiscal 22. We're expecting slow wage growth, slower growth in income. I have it noted later, but I'll advise everyone right now that at this point, we do not build in any additional stimulus in the forecast. If Congress acts and does something, we will take that into account at that time, because just given all the options they have, there's no way for us to accurately estimate or predict what type of stimulus, how much stimulus, and when stimulus is going to be occurring. Similarly, we don't have any anticipation for COVID to significantly change for the better or for the worse. We're going to, our assumption is based on that COVID is going to still restrict our activity during this forecast period.
Moving on, you may have noticed that the pandemic has not disappeared after Election Day, as some politicians speculated. In fact, the country is seeing the worst of it right now. South Carolina continues to hold steady, though our cases are increasing. But what we haven't seen, and it is something politicians have been talking about, is more economic stimulus as the economy continues to experience jolts, such as these record case numbers, despite a promise of a vaccine. While Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is saying fat chance to an economic stimulus, Fed Chairman Jerome Powell says more wouldn't hurt.
This crisis in particular is one that will require a response from all of government. And that's because it's really not a typical downturn. This is a downturn where a full employment economy suddenly experienced mass unemployment due to this external shock, really a natural disaster. And monetary policy works through stimulating aggregate demand, and that's important now, but ultimately there was a job to replace lost incomes there. And I would say that our Congress stepped in, and there hasn't been a faster or stronger response from Congress to an economic emergency really since the Great Depression. You know, the CARES Act and the other laws that they passed really more than fully offset lost income in the aggregate. Now, there will be people for whom that is not true, but it was quite a strong response. And you see still high levels of savings on the balance sheets of households. And we've not experienced the downside cases that we were quite worried about of mass insolvencies of companies and businesses. And so far, so good, I would say. The second, really the most important leg of all, of course, is the healthcare leg. You know, as I said earlier, there's no full recovery without confidence that it's safe to undertake all activities. And we had our part to do, which I think we've done. So I would also say, though, that the path forward is going to be challenging, and that my sense is that we will need to do more and that Congress may need to do more as well in fiscal policy. The actual particulars of that are up to Congress and not up to us. But I do think it's likely that more will need to be done in time. But I would say that our response to date has really been quite strong.
That was Fed Chair Jerome Powell at a virtual conference hosted by the European Central Bank, saying that we face challenging days ahead and a need for more stimulus. And again, the official word from Washington is deadlock. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer are dug in on a $2 trillion stimulus with McConnell against it. Senate Appropriations Chair Richard Shelby is pushing for a $500 billion stimulus instead. Going to start off our short health section here with a troubling report from Reuters that finds many COVID-19 survivors are likely to be at greater risk of developing mental illness after a large study found 20% of those infected with the coronavirus are diagnosed with a psychiatric disorder within 90 days. This is some troubling news here. Anxiety, depression, and insomnia were most common among recovered COVID-19 patients in the study who developed mental health problems. The researchers from Britain's Oxford University also found significantly higher risks of dementia. The study, published in the Lancet Psychiatry Journal, analyzed electronic health records of 69 million people in the United States, including more than 62,000 cases of COVID-19. In the 3 months following testing positive for COVID-19, 1 in 5 survivors were recorded as having a first-time diagnosis of anxiety, depression, or insomnia. This was about twice as likely for other groups of patients in the same period, according to the researchers. Mental health specialists not directly involved with the study said its findings add to growing evidence that COVID-19 can affect the brain and mind, increasing the risk of a range of psychiatric illnesses. That just reiterates how much we still don't know about this virus, people. It's not the flu. It's not just a cold you get over. It has so many ramifications, like this study points out. But one thing that we do know is that masks help. We've known this. Months we've known this. Wear a mask. And the CDC continues to encourage folks to wear those masks as a way to limit the volume of droplets expelled into the environment. but update analysis indicates that masks can provide protection for the wearer as well, including the ability to filter fine droplets and particles less than 10 microns, which is super small. Now, this varies by masks and types, of course, with multi-layer masks made of more densely woven material performing better than those single-layer masks made from lower thread count fabric. Always go for higher thread count, people. Sheets, masks, towels, lead indoorses. Welcome to the wind down section, our little break from the news. We talk about life during the pandemic and want to hear your stories as well. And while we welcome everyone's calls, we have a question for folks. Specifically, we want you to call us and tell us how your Thanksgiving's going to look this year. 803-563-7169. No, maybe not the arguments that you're planning on having, though you can tell us about that. But we want to know if you're going to even have those arguments, if you're going to be going to your aunt's house, your uncle's house, or, you know, whoever's house or outdoor facility you visit on Thanksgiving. You know, are you going to be frying that turkey in the front yard and, you know, let it spill over and catch everything on fire? Let us know. Send us a picture.
Whose house are you burning down? Please
Whose house are you going to burn down? Lead does not endorse arson. Okay, that being said, AT, did we get any voicemails? Or do we have anything in the old in Santa's box of treats?
This is a stuffed box, let me tell you what. Well, okay, so Rose, we were gonna play you today, Rose, but in our last episode, Gavin made a grievous error.
Almost unforgivable.
That was almost his last episode. It was going to be AT's lead.
I was called into management.
Severe reprimands. But so
you'll find out in a moment.
A very good friend of the pod call in and point this out. So let's roll the damning evidence tape.
Hey, Gavin and AT, first time caller, long time listener, CJ, and the good old metropolis of Columbia, South Carolina. I just had a little bit of a gripe in your election coverage on Monday. You stated that Atlanta was in Gwinnett County, and it just kind of triggered the deep down Georgia boy in me, and I just needed to get that out there. Otherwise, y'all doing a great job. Enjoy the show and keep it up. Bye.
So that's what it took to finally get CJ to call us, you know, and that was I'm going to go ahead and say that was intentional. That was a plot.
It was a psyops.
I said, I don't care about Fulton County. I want to, you know, go ahead and say Gwinnett because Fulton. Like, now we're going to do like a Lancaster thing here.
No, I'm just saying that's where it is. Atlanta Fulton is in Fulton County.
Yeah, I said Fulton.
There's a reason that we're the South Carolina lead. That's all I'm going to say. Okay, CJ?
Fulton County.
If there's an Atlanta lead, you're welcome to listen to it. Okay.
God, I mean, how many downtowns does Atlanta have? And I will be honest, I only know like two parts of Atlanta. Smyrna, where my good friend Maya lives, and then Midtown, which is like where we go out. So like that's the extent, folks. And then of course the interstate and the airport. So I guess I know four places. But
very cool. Very cool.
That's my hot take on Atlanta. Enjoy your hand counting, folks. Great law.
If you need a podcast to listen to,
let your friends know.
As we make fun of you, count by hand. Good lord.
So, okay. We were talking about Thanksgiving plans. We want to talk about what we're doing.
One thing that I want to mention before we get into the Thanksgiving plans is in the last episode, I don't know if it was the last episode or two episodes ago, Gavin said something about leave a review. I said, I don't care what the review is as long as it's five stars. I said, put the first chapter of Moby Dick for all I care as long as it's five stars. And I'm going to say...
You spoke it into an existence.
Yes. One of you overachievers went and did it. And you made your name. This is AT's fault. And I
adorable.
Love this.
I love it.
Yeah, I love it. This and chaos. So I would like whoever did this to reveal yourself. And please let me know who you are. You can slide into any old DMs. You
or
can
803-563-7169. Yeah.
Reveal yourself, please, because I'm pretty sure we would be great friends. So
I got the alert that we had new reviews. And I was like, what in the world is this? And then you're like... Oh, yeah, I kind of told him they could do this. It's pretty funny to see.
Oh, it's great. Oh, you love to see
we're
it.
Super,
you know what I mean?
We're super edgy. You know, I think like we could take that to our podcast convention if it ever happens again. And we can be like, well, one way to stimulate reviews is to ask for arbitrary ones.
Yeah. Ask for literary masterwork chapters as reviews.
Like, what's the book that we don't quote anymore that you used to quote?
Infinite Jest?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
That's probably going to be the next chapter, but that's probably going to be too long for a review.
You would get cut off. It would be
rightfully
like...
Rightfully so.
This is too condescending of a chapter to post. But anyway, Gavin, what are your plans for Thanksgiving?
Well, I can see it now. I can smell the smells and
taste. I can see
taste,
it in
tastes.
Bright lights. Yams. You know,
mother in her kerchief and Pop in her cap. Oh, that's Christmas. Whatever.
Whatever.
No, we're not going to be going to Aunt Kathleen's in Fredericksburg, Virginia this year. We have called an audible. The Jackson family will be staying home in Silver Spring, Maryland.
Are you going to Maryland now?
I will be. I'll be traversing Interstate 95 in my vehicle.
I could take the week off
and just go up and hang out with my mom and chill.
Sure,
and then we're going to probably
sure.
see my brother, his wife, and their three kids, and then Colin and Megan,
three
his
kids.
Wife. Yeah, little Rugrats too. They're adorable, but we're not gonna go down and see my cousins and my aunts and everyone because it's like, you know. Eww. But Maryland's not doing too hot either right now. I think they're starting to close some things back down. So I don't know.
Can't blame them.
Yeah, I mean, I've been testing negative. I'm gonna make sure I'm totally good to go before I go up and see my mom because I know she's very aware of it as well. As are my dad and my stepmom down here, but.
Even if they aren't, it's good to get tested.
Yeah, yeah. You definitely want to regularly do that, and you can get it done.
Knowledge
it's
is
free.
Power, you know?
It's free. Knowledge
is power.
Having fun is not hard when you have a library card. I don't get why that's so hard for people to understand. Anyway,
AT. I don't like Thanksgiving food.
We're due for a hot take. Stir people
we
up.
Don't
I
really,
know this, but go ahead.
I don't like Thanksgiving food. My family, we're not big Thanksgiving people.
Go off, King.
Go off, King. Get them. Drag them.
Get those pilgrims.
one of the tenets, I know that I'm wrong on this one right here. One of the tenets of my wife and I's relationship is we both don't really like mashed potatoes.
Well, you're Lebanese as well. You're not telling the people the truth.
So, yeah.
Be honest.
To be honest, my Thanksgivings were really just big Middle Eastern spreads. So,
could you imagine
this? We had turkey and stuff like that, but like really we had hummus and hashwi and pita and all that kind of stuff. Meat pies is good stuff.
It sounds amazing.
And so every time I ever got invited to someone else's Thanksgiving, I'd always bring Middle Eastern food and no one else would eat it except me.
Really flipped the script there.
It works for me. I like it anyway.
But Kaylin's parents do a traditional,
they
right?
Do. They have very traditional Thanksgivings. Yeah, they got it all.
So give me your favorite Thanksgiving dish.
Dish is hashwi, which is,
besides your favorite Lebanese Thanksgiving dish.
Oh, besides the Lebanese
I'm talking about your favorite, when you have to go and actually partake in the traditional.
I don't know. I think turkey is the worst poultry. Like, I don't think it's very
good. What's your least favorite dish? And please don't say green bean casserole because that will just be the dagger.
I've never had green bean casserole in my life.
Put that on the list. Big Mac, Whopper, green bean casserole.
I really don't like any. I like peas.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, or the canned cranberry. Like, what is this supposed to be like?
I've never had that.
Fancy. Check out see the ridges of the can.
My God, man.
I don't,
I don't like that stuff. What's your favorite dish then? Is it
the green bean casserole? And then I would say stuffing with a lot of...
stuffing. I like stuffing.
With a lot of gravy and you
I
mix
like
it in
dressing,
there with like the turkey.
Dressing or stuffing?
Dressing, yeah. Whatever. Well, we say stuffing, but it's dressing down
here. I like that stuff. But I mean, we never had it. I never had it growing up, you know? So, I mean, that's I understand that that's my problem.
Yeah, and then
but,
like you know, the after Thanksgiving... You know, leftover meals are always fun too. When you make a little sandwich and the gravy.
I actually just thought of my favorite part of actual American Thanksgiving.
Hell yeah!
Is
preach it.
The Wawa gobbler.
Don't know what that means.
It's got like cranberry sauce and gravy and turkey.
This is
something
you can get
sandwich.
At Wawa.
Yeah, the famous gas station sandwiches. It's a sandwich. It's called the gobbler. It's the best part of. of Thanksgiving for me.
Even when I get up to Maryland, I don't think we even have any Wawas yet. We have to go above the Mason-Dixon line.
I think they're in Maryland and Virginia, especially on 95. They're definitely on 95.
You get sheets down in Virginia.
Ugh, sheets, garbage.
Easy. That's the next
garbage. Wawa for life.
Wawa.
Go Birds.
I was at a Sphinx. We were up at a Sphinx in Spartanburg. It was the last time we taped the pod. Remember, we were on the campaign trail. I did a Meg's car. We had just went to the Sphinx. I think, did I even mention that in the wind down? Had a great fried chicken sandwich. I mean, my God.
Ugh. You got to go to a Wawa, walk up to the board. You go beep, up, 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 beep, beep, beep. And they give you a sandwich and it's good.
I live in the reality that I can control, and there is no Wawa nearby me, AT. There is
Wawa for life, dude.
But maybe, you know, when I'm driving up 95, I'll keep you posted if I see one. I'll stop if I see one.
You know what else is good at a Wawa? Is the Italian.
Get a hoagie.
The Italian. A hoagie.
Get
it a might
hoagie
be Hoagie Fest, bro.
I wonder if people
take
have stopped listening
out.
By
hoagie
now.
Hoagie Fest, let's take it out.
I think we've devolved. Don't get us started and talk about sandwiches, folks. Oh, we'd be here all day.
Hashtag Enzo's. Hashtag eat hoagies.
Hashtag Enzo's. You never saw such a place south of the border. Oh, Thanks for listening to the pod, y'all. Show us your appreciation by leaving us a review on iTunes. You know, maybe a review that actually says something about our pod being so great and wonderful. Or, the first chapter of a book. Leave it out there. 5 stars as long as it's 5 stars. Or a voicemail, 803-563-7169. You can also stay up to date with the latest news on SCETV.org and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. Also, consider becoming an ETV member. Sounds like a great Christmas present, if you ask me. I don't need it because I already got a membership. But if you want to give someone the gift of education, entertainment, and civilization, give them the gift of an ETV membership. It just starts at $40. Or you can go $75 and be really fancy, or above that and be even fancier. And you get access to PBS Passport and all the great programming your donation helps support. So think about it. Become a member. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina. If you guys can't get enough of this, you're going to want to watch.
You're going to look the way you look, I guarantee it.
Oh, you're going to like the way you love, I guarantee it.